Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here are your hosts, Katie Comley and Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, the Conservative Party is under fire for offering a potential bribe to late MP Chuck Cadman.
And the Canadian Federation of Students weighs in on the recent Conservative federal budget.
And on commentary this week, Phil Caudry discusses the pros and cons of the Conservatives' recent budget and speculates if it will cause the government to fall or not.
We'll have all this plus arts, sports, and your weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101.
But first, before we turn to our regular news stories, we have our regular Friday piece from our friends at Radio Free UBC, and we're going to turn things over to Brian and Eric with their take on campus events.
How's it going?
Hey, Brian. Okay, so I've got Brian here, and we're going to start talking a little bit about Trek Park. So I'm just going to ask you a few questions here. What was the movement that originally gave rise to Trek Park?
Well, what happened was a lot of students came back to UBC this fall expecting another normal year and found that a large development plan was taking place on University Boulevard. So what people first want to know is what exactly is happening. And it quickly came out that the Board of Governors had unilaterally decided that our school needed a bus loop. But the largest problem with an underground bus loop, which was the plan, was that it would put our that plan in debt by $40 million, and the Board of Governors thought the only reason to fund or to fix that funding deficit was with a shopping mall and three floors of condos ranging from $800,000 to $2 million, which is definitely not the student budget. So,
Okay, $40 million. Okay, so Trek Park came out of an opposition to this, questioning this attitude. What were the first movements and what was it originally?
Well, the Students for Democratic Society quickly, after they had learned about this plan, organized a petition to get students in support of stopping this bus loop. Because this is a campus, you know, there's no place for condos and retail businesses that are not for students at all. It's part of this overall plan to take UBC, which is built on Musqueam First Nations land, and the Board of Governors typically rezone the land, and then as they are developers, they use their developing companies to build condos, and the money goes into their pockets. Like, this is not a plan for university. This is a plan for taking advantage of a large amount of people that have some money to spend.
Right. Okay. So a shopping mall, bus loop, these are all commercial events. And this was what the petition was principally opposing. This is what the plans to have the shopping mall and so on, these were things that you guys were asking for, and also to not have this underground bus loop that would cost $40 million. How did that first petition go? What was granted? What was ignored?
The first petition went really well. There were quickly 4,000 signatures gathered showing that students were in opposition to this plan. And the next step by the university was to deny that students were actually opposed to the plan. So they went around with a new round of consultations that happened in the last couple months. The results of these consultations were 400 students filled out the 10-page survey showing what they wanted with that space, and one student out of 400 supported the university's plan. It was overwhelming. 80% of students wanted free open space. Students were receptive to ideas that are being brought up in the sub-renewal project, as in spaces where people can study 24 hours a day, spaces that are open for students, expansion for clubs, and things of the like. But no one wanted to see expensive retail and expensive condos going in.
Nice. Okay. And I hope I don't put you on the spot here, but just one quick thing here is with the $40 million, there's a lot that can be done with this money.
Yes.
Right. And maybe you could just outline just a couple of things where that money could be put towards.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of big problems on campus. I mean, right now we've got a wait list of around 2,000 people for residents. We've got a wait list of 1,200 people for childcare. And the university, as you can see outside, is wasting hundreds and thousands of even millions of dollars building an exploratory tunnel while no plan has even been put through the Board of Governors about this underground bus loop. So, I mean, they are ready to jump the gun and spend money with no plans, whereas a lot of people who are involved with Trek Park are interested in student initiatives, students actually making decisions about space that's happening on campus.
Nice.
So one really interesting thing that's coming up is hopes for a cooperative housing, shelter, food system where you know, it, there are plans right now for structures going in the Trek Park space. And there, with a small amount of funding, there could be structures that could support free housing just to give people beds to sleep in. Because students are in debt, and there's people all over the city that are being marginalized by gentrification plans, which are the same thing that's happening at UBC.
Right. Excellent points. Now, one thing that might get brought up in this discussion is that people know that there was a petition. They know they signed the petition. They know that it went through in some way. Maybe you can outline what actually did happen and what didn't happen and why there now is a second petition coming out.
Yeah, well, the petition was part of the universe, or response to the university's What is the Plan scheme, where students were led to believe that they actually had a say in issues. Unfortunately, people who worked at Cafe Crepe, Mahoney & Sons, and Shoppers Drug Mart learned through their employment that those businesses had signed an agreement with UBC promising an underground bus loop and promising condos. And this occurred 5 years before the university released any sort of information to the students.
Right.
So, I mean, from the beginning, students have been misled by the Board of Governors and misled by the administration. So that petition was to stop the bus loop, because that is the fundamental problem. If there's no bus loop, there's no condos, there's no retail.
Mm-hmm.
There is space for student initiatives for expansion of a sub, which we really need. But the second petition does have some suggestions of things that a lot of students think are important and could that space could be utilized for. I mean, mm-hmm. $40 million is a lot of money, and we have a lot of problems on this campus.
Excellent. Okay. So as I understood, the first petition did manage to stop the shopping mall from getting constructed. Now there's something kind of in between. So things have been done. We have made some progress, but the bus loop issue was totally ignored. And it seems to me this is the core issue behind the second petition.
Yeah. What's really important here is that no real decisions have been made. But what has happened is that things have become impossible for the administration to do politically.
Okay.
And that is only because of students have gotten involved and shown that they actually care about what's happening on campus.
Excellent.
So all of you that are listening, you have a voice, and it's really important to get involved with groups like SDS and get around and sign this petition and come to this conference that's happening next week, Resisting the University. There's 5 days of things going on. You can check the SDS website, sdsubc.ca. It's got the schedule. There's things for interest for everyone. If you want to be active, come to Trek Park and help build things there. If you've got any sort of vision for the space, come share them with people. It's an open, inclusive space. This is what's really important.
Mm-hmm.
There's no group that's in control of this. It's about getting students involved, getting students to understand what's happening on campus.
Excellent. Yeah, one of the things that I've really gathered and really liked about Trek Park is that you have specific mandates and specific things that you're fighting for, but at the same time, whatever students want to bring, whatever they want, Trek Park's real idea is to give a voice, right? To students, whatever that voice is, whatever they see. You know, if they want to voice their opinion on something, that's what it's there for, right? And for people who don't know, it's on the south side of the sub. It's right across. I don't even know how to describe
it. Yeah, it's the old bus loop location.
There we go. Old bus loop location. So there it is, and we've even got a table, chairs set up out there. We want to really encourage people to get involved, do your homework out there if the weather's nice, whatever. Come by, you know, voice your opinion, get involved. Everybody there's, you know, friendly, open to whatever sort of particular, you know, opinions you may have. And, just to round that off, how to get involved, they can go to the website, as you said, sdsubc.ca. And what else can they do? Come to
the conference. The conference is going to be a huge source of mobilization for this student campus. And
Excellent. When
people come, they can get online with SDS emailing lists. They can find out about meetings. You can also sign the petition and mostly get informed about important issues. You check the schedule and you can see things like understanding the power structure of UBC on Thursday. Every student at UBC should know where these decisions are coming from. You know, you see condos being built, and most people don't know that. I mean, they are being built on land that has been rezoned by the Board of Governors and then is being built by construction companies owned by the Board of Governors. I mean, the connections here are really just mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, Brian, thanks so much for talking to me, for talking to us.
Thanks, sir.
You have some excellent stuff. What I'm going to do just to round off here is I'm going to talk a little bit more about the conference that Brian was mentioning. It's called Resisting the University. It's going to take place all around campus next week. So that's March 3rd to 7th. It's a conference on student activism and social change. And It's going to begin on Monday with an opening keynote speaker, David Noble. I'll just tell you a little bit about David Noble and also Denny Rancour, who's going to be at the end of the week on Friday. So these are our two main speakers, but there's events all through the week. If you want to find out more about the events, go to sdsubc.ca, or you can also go to the SDS office, which is located right by CITR and the Dance Club, and you can pick up a pamphlet and you can talk to us there. And I'll just give you a little bit of information about David Noble and Denny Rancour. David Noble is coming in on Monday, and he's going to talk. His talk is called From Whining to Winning, Winning the Battle with the University, Dummy Corporations and All. David Noble is a York University professor. He's a critical historian of technology, science, and education. He's best known for his seminal work on the social history of automation, and he currently teaches in the Division of Social Science and the Department of Social and Political Thought at York University. At the end of the week, we're going to have another keynote speaker, Denny Rancour, and he's going to give a speech on anarchism in academia now. Denny Rancour is a physics professor and an environmental researcher and activist and anarchist. And I'm just going to close with a little line here right above him in the program. Radical professors are needed to indoctrinate progressive students. Anarchist professors are needed to make sanity. If they're not trying to stop you, then you're not making a difference.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, and that wraps up our weekly piece from Radio Free UBC. Now, for a look at other local news, we're joined in studio by our regular crew of News 101 reporters, including Marie Bernard, Tracy Fuller, and Carrie Baptist.
Do you love crossword puzzles? Are you a Scrabble master? If the board game Scrabble is one of your passions, you might want to head down to the Masonic Lodge on West 8th Avenue tomorrow. The annual Vancouver Scrabble tournament is on tomorrow and Sunday and will be attracting competitors from as far away as Montreal and New Jersey. Sign-in starts at 9 o'clock and games begin at 10 a.m. The top prize is around $700, but the organizers of the event say the biggest perk is the prestige.
Postal workers are trying to raise awareness about the injustices a leap year may bring. Postal workers in rural and suburban areas around Vancouver, like Abbotsford and Maple Ridge, are angry that they don't receive overtime for working February 29th. They are given an annual salary which doesn't take into account the extra day's work every 4 years. Royal City Postal Union leader Glenn Manson says that because of this, workers are not given fair compensation for their work on February 29th.
Supporters of Laibar Singh have become divided over whether Singh should be returned to India. Laibar is a quadriplegic Surrey man who is facing deportation to India because he entered Canada with a false passport. Singh is currently in sanctuary in the Guru Nanak Sikh Temple in Surrey. Former supporter Harpal Nagra has publicly stated that he believes, after a recent visit to India, that Singh could receive better medical treatment in India than in Canada, and so he should present himself to the Canadian government for deportation. According to the president of the Guru Nanak Sikh Temple, this statement prompted other supporters of Singh to hold a meeting at the temple to discuss whether he should return to India or not. If Laibar Singh does not present himself to the Canadian Border Services by Monday, he will lose his $50,000 bond.
And we're now going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Hi, this is William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Improv. March shows. Teddy bears and rainbows.
What?
It's the UBC Improv Team's March shows.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, yes, I did. Did I? So check this out. Shows are happening Tuesday, March 4th and Wednesday, March 5th at 7 p.m. Cost is extremely reasonable. You can find the laughter at the Scarf Building, Room 100 on University Boulevard and Main Mall, UBC. The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Yeah. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors. Cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips. Yeah.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:20. Now with a look at other BC news, we're joined in studio once again by News 101 reporters Marie Bernard, Tracy Fuller, and Carrie Baptist.
A new First Nations-only school has been approved for Prince George, British Columbia. Child advocate Mary Ellen Terpel-Lafond says that the provincial school system needs to do more to improve the graduation rate of First Nations students. Terpel-Lafond says that these students face serious obstacles in school, especially ones in urban areas, including racism and exclusion. A First Nations-only school will celebrate Native culture and give students a choice about where and how they want to pursue their education. While BC has a graduation rate of 80%, the graduation rate of First Nations students is 48% and only 15% of First Nations students who are in foster care.
A church in Wanaque has voted in favor of offering same-sex marriages. Currently, a major schism has been created within the Anglican Church over the issue. 15 churches in the nation are voting to separate from the Anglican Church of Canada. Reverend David Findlay Price's church in Wanaque voted on allowing same-sex blessings on Sunday. Only one member voted against the idea. The Reverend says his church is an inclusive and progressive church in the Valley, which tends to be more conservative. He feels it's important his group stand up for their liberal voice. He adds, people say homosexuality is a choice. Well, it's not a choice. It's just part of the natural order of creation. All we're saying is let's bless people who have come to love each other as part of the natural order of how the universe is created. We have to move away from flat earth theology and become more enlightened, says Findlay Price. Church members have also aligned themselves with Bishop Michael Ingham, who is a global leader in the campaign to give homosexuals full rights within the Anglican Church.
The Union of British Columbia Indian Chiefs is warning Canadians a Native Day of protest will take place again this year because of a lack of federal funding. Grand Chief Stuart Phillips explained that First Nations are angry over the lack of funding for economic development in this week's federal budget. Phillips says the frustration of the First Nations community stems from the current Conservative government's replacing the $5 billion Kelowna Accord with a trickle of funding for First Nations economic development. Chief Stuart called the $35 million allowed by the federal government tragically laughable in the face of the crisis First Nations find themselves in this country. Last year, the Union of British Columbia Indian Chiefs joined a national day of protest that closed highways, roads, and rail lines across the country. Phillips said this year will be worse, and planning is underway this week for a protest that will bring large parts of the country to a standstill.
Governor General Michel Jean awarded 13 British Columbians with medals of bravery today in Ottawa. A joint award was presented to a group of people who had put their own lives in danger to rescue two men trapped in a mudslide near Terrace in August of 2004. Two RCMP officers were awarded for their efforts in arresting a Coquitlam thief in December of 2004. Despite having the robber fire gunshots at them, the officers managed to detain him without harm caused to the public. Three men from Whistler were honored for their rescue of a man who had fallen through the ice of Green Lake in March of 2005. An RCMP constable was recognized for his rescue of a drowning suspect in November of 2004. Two suspects were trying to flee RCMP when they tried to swim across the Nanaimo River in Cedar, BC. And, in possibly the most interesting story, a 16-year-old was honored for her incredible bravery in saving her father's life in August of 2005. On their farm in Vanderhoof, BC, a rampaging bull attacked the girl's father and battered him to the brink of death. The girl raced out from the house and repeatedly punched the enraged bull in the snout until it finally backed down. We're going to take another break now, but when we come back, we're going to update you on national and international news. Stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
Daddy, can't you hear the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to me, Paul. Listen to the voice.
What really happens when we sleep? Discover the answers with a free 8-week course on dreams and out-of-body experiences. Begin a journey that will change your perspective on life. Learn about OBEs and how to have them and unlock the mysteries of dreaming. The course begins Saturday, 8th of March, and runs from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. It takes place at the Library Square Conference Center, 350 West Georgia Street, downtown Vancouver. To reserve a spot or for more information, call 1-877-GNOSIS1 or email vancouver@gnosticmovement.com.
What do leeks, daffodils, and male chorus singing have in common?
They are all symbols of Wales, and they will come together on the 1st of March, St. David's Day.
The choir, sponsored by the UBC Faculty Women's Club, will perform a benefit concert as a scholarship fundraiser for UBC students. Help the Vancouver Welsh Men's Choir celebrate the occasion at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Vancouver.
The event will be taking place Saturday, March 1st, 2008, 8 p.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, located at 2881 Main Street, Vancouver. To order tickets, call 604-263-9567 or 604-224-3941.
CITR.
CITR 101.9 FM presents our second That DJ competition at the Pit, Thursday, April 3rd, 2008.
CITR Second That DJ competition is looking for the most versatile party DJ in Vancouver.
It's quite simple. Eight DJs play 15-minute sets each, with a minimum of three genres of music to keep the party rocking.
There are no restrictions on what audio sources or what music style That DJ chooses to use. DJs must bring their own music and needle and provide their own transportation. The equipment provided will be properly functioning, professional quality equipment.
Interested? Send your demo to The DJ Competition, CITR Radio, 233-6138 Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1, Canada.
Along with your full name, email address, mailing address, home or cell phone, your musical style, and audio sources used.
MySpace submissions are also accepted. For more information, please visit our website at www.citr.ca or email thatdjcompetition2008, all one word, at gmail.com.
And the news continues on CITR. Researchers at a Canadian university are making progress in the fight against AIDS. With more on that and other stories, here once again are Marie Bernard, Tracy Fuller, and Carrie Baptist.
A breakthrough in the fight against AIDS was made by the University of Alberta researchers. Researcher Stephen Barr and colleagues have discovered a gene and protein named TRIM22, which blocks late-stage HIV from multiplying and spreading. This is the first time a gene has been discovered that prevents late-stage HIV from leaving a cell and infecting others. It could prevent the onset of AIDS by blocking further infection of cells with HIV. Hopefully, now that this new gene has been identified, it will make it possible for scientists to create vaccines which could target late-stage HIV. Current AIDS vaccines are mostly antiretroviral drugs, which work by suppressing the virus. However, AIDS can become drug-resistant, which is why it's so important for scientists to discover new methods of attack. In Canada today, 58,000 people are infected with HIV or AIDS.
Shortly before he succumbed to cancer in July of 2005, the Conservatives made a $1 million offer to the late independent MP Chuck Cadman in an attempt to sway his vote to bring down Paul Martin's minority liberal government. This allegation is according to a new biography by Vancouver journalist Tom Zarchuk, entitled Like a Rock, The Chuck Cadman Story, set for release on March 15th. The vote in question was on a budget amendment in May of 2005. According to Zatuk, two Conservative reps met with Cadman 2 days before the vote and presented him with a list of enticements to rejoin the Conservative Party, a list which included the $1 million life insurance policy. Though Prime Minister Stephen Harper is quoted in the book as supporting some of the details of the bribe, officials from the Prime Minister's office have denied the claim, saying that Harper never directed party officials to make the offer.
Prominent Quebec author Victor Lévy-Beaulieu is threatening to burn his own books unless something is done to stop the increase of bilingualism in that province. Beaulieu is the author of more than 70 books of fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. He has threatened to burn his entire collection unless the provincial government of Quebec quells the spread of bilingualism in the next 2 months. Beaulieu's ultimatum was sparked by Parti Québécois leader Pauline Marois' statement that students in Quebec should take more classes in English. Victor Lévy explains his opposition to bilingualism, saying that it opens the door to an assault by the anglicized elites of Quebec, who tell all Quebecers that they have to be at least bilingual. By burning his books, Beaulieu says he would be admitting that his life as a writer had counted for nothing since Quebec is in the process of being anglicized.
And the Canadian Federation of Students applauded part of the Conservative budget that was released this week. The Federation is pleased to see the introduction of the National System of Grants. The Federation says they have been lobbying for something of this nature for several years. This year's budget will provide $350 million for grants to low- and middle-income students beginning in 2009. The total funding of the grant system is said to reach $430 million by 2012. Individual grants will range from $800 to $2,000 per year and will be allocated to about 245,000 students each year. In BC, average student debt has risen to $27,000, which is up from $18,500 in 2001. Amanda Aziz, national chairperson of the Canadian Federation of Students, said the announcement marks the end of Canada's tenure as one of the few Western industrialized nations without a national system of grants. While the Federation of Students is applauding the government, other groups are skeptical and note that this program only replaces the formal Liberal government's Millennium Scholarship Foundation, which was recently scrapped by the Conservative government.
It's now time for another break here on News 101, but stay tuned for more like commentary coming up on the other side.
Want to see your film up on the big screen?
The Vancouver Student Film Festival is back to showcase the best of BC's post-secondary student and alumni film and video makers on May 24th.
The film festival is looking for entries of all genres, from student or graduate filmmakers within the last 3 years. Films received by March 1st are only $10 and $20 until April 19th.
Only 2 weeks left before the early entry deadline. For entry rules and to submit online, please visit www.vsff.com.
Let the cartoons begin!
Welcome back to News 101. It's now time for commentary, and this week, Phil Caudry analyzes this week's conservative federal budget and speculates on the potential for a spring election.
Jim Flaherty delivered his budget on Wednesday in the House of Commons, and as promised, the budget was much leaner, didn't include any new programs in Canada or any major tax breaks. However, important issues to Canadians were definitely touched upon, and I want to go over them today. I'm going to start off with the good in the budget. Jim Flaherty introduced a proposal to include a tax-free savings account for Canadians to encourage savings. Canadians are able to have $5,000 in an account that gains growth tax-free. In principle, this is a great idea. People spend more than they even earn in a lot of cases, and we need to start saving more as a country. However, this plan is going to encourage more bank accounts and will increase the bank administrative fees and bureaucracy. So it's not all win-win. The second area of the budget that I really liked was education. There's going to be more grant money for the Canadian Student Grant Program at $350 million, and this coincides with the wind-down of the Millennium Scholarship Fund. There will also be $25 million over 2 years to establish a new Canadian Grant Scholarship Award to attract top Canadian and international doctoral students. If Canada is going to compete with China and India, it's going to have to be a well-educated society and compete with them based on product and service quality rather than the lowest price. The third area of the budget that intrigued me was in crime prevention. There's going to be a lot more money for recruiting frontline officers and to train them across the country. $400 million will be set aside for the provinces and the territories to train more officers. This is a great move because it coincides with the Tories' crime bill to get tough on crime. If the Tories want to see their crime bill in action, they're going to need officers on the front lines, and this provision enables them to do just that. On to the bad areas of the budget, the first being Aboriginal Canadians. Almost $700 million will be spent for new programs. As we've seen in the last 30 years, government programs have done nothing for Aboriginal Canadians. Their standard of living has gone down, their educational and work opportunities have also suffered. These kind of programs, while good in principle, including cleaning up the water supply in Aboriginal communities, should be consolidated into their appropriate portfolios instead of on its own. The Tories have the opportunity to take leadership on this issue to make it a central plank, but choose not to and choose to follow the status quo of simply throwing more money at the problem, which has not been the solution in the last 30 years. The second area of contention I have with the budget is on immigration. $22 million will be spent to fast-track permanent citizenship. While I think there is a lot of bureaucracy when it comes to immigration, the fact of the matter is that we need more background checks to ensure that we're not going to have criminals coming to this country. Major urban areas of Canada have had their problems with crime lords from overseas, and the last thing Canada needs is more of that. If anything, I think that $22 million could be spent on border security. Thirdly, agriculture, which has always been a major point of contention for me. I firmly believe that we need to open Canadian agriculture to international markets. The fact is that consumers are paying way more than they should be for dairy products and wheat products because of the Wheat Board and Dairy Board. And the $92 million slush fund that the government's proposing now does nothing for consumers and only furthers the interest of farmers. The government should be looking out for the consumer, not the producer. And this is another area that the Tories are not taking leadership on. I've been quite critical of the Tories on the environment, and I have to be again. They're spending money towards the environment, but it's not doing a lot of good towards solving the problem now, and seems like a way to stall for time. A lot of the money in this budget towards the environment is going towards research and development, and setting up a Made in Canada solution to global warming. I think this is the wrong solution. This is a global problem, and it needs global action. I'm really disappointed in the Tories taking such a partisan stance on solving environmental problems. They need to get engaged with the international community and with international organizations as a way to solve this problem rather than spending money on research and development to seeing if the problem actually exists. So overall, I'd have to give the budget about a C+. It has some interesting elements to it, encouraging savings and education and getting tough on crime. But at the same time, it really takes a status quo on quite a few issues that need leadership, such as Aboriginal Canadian issues, immigration, farming, and the environment. This budget is definitely intended to pass. It's not the kind of budget that I see the Conservatives will fall on. And I think it will be one of those budgets that won't be remembered in years to come. There's no sort of radical change that's being proposed, but that isn't necessarily a bad thing. The Canadian economy is doing pretty well right now, and staying the course is not necessarily the worst idea. However, I will be taking this budget into account when grading the next one. If Flaherty does not improve his performance in these areas that I've outlined, I may not give his budget a passing grade. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
And thanks for that piece, Phil. We're now going to go take a look at this week's Art Beat with Katie Fitzpatrick.
Hello and welcome to your 5-Minute Arts Beat here on News 101. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. Coming up in our 5-Minute Beat here, we're going to be talking about the Arts Club new production, Bombay Black, with a review, but first up, some listings. The Three Sisters. Presentation House Theatre presents Anton Chekhov's classic drama about a provincial Russian family that longs to return to Moscow. You can find more information at www.phtheatre.org. That's till March 1st at the Presentation House Theatre in North Vancouver. Here's an interesting one, 2 Degrees of Fear and Desire. Headlines Theatre presents an interactive theatre event facilitated by David Diamond that includes audience member stories about altering their own environmentally unfriendly behaviour. That's till March 16th. It's going to be at venues around Metro Vancouver. It's pay what you can. Not so much a theatre event as an audience participation event, but it's all about green living, which is something that's important to all of us nowadays. The Amorous Adventures of Anatole. The Playhouse Theatre Company presents the world premiere of Morris Panych's adaptation of the Arthur Schnitzler play about a charming womanizer who was always looking for his next conquest. That's till March 8th at the Vancouver Playhouse at Hamilton and Dunsmuir. Rough House. Toronto's Night Swimming presents a wordless one-man physical theatre performance by Andy Massingham. That is till March 1st at the Vancouver Cultural East Cultural Centre on Venable. Sounds like an interesting one. The Visit. SFU School for the Contemporary Arts presents a play by Friedrich Dürrenmatt, directed by Penelope Stella and starring a large cast of students and featuring guest artist Linda Putnam. That is till March 8th, 2008, and that is showing at the SFU Theatre out in Burnaby. How It Works. Touchstone Theatre presents Daniel MacIver's drama about a divorced cop looking for a fresh start for himself and his drug-abusing daughter. That's till March 9th at Performance Works, Cartwright on Granville Island. Should've. Theatre at UBC here on campus and the UBC Department of Chemistry present a play by Nobel laureate in chemistry recipient Ronald Hoffman, which questions the creative responsibility of both scientists and artists. That's till March 8th at the Frederick Wood Theatre. Red Light Winter. Adam Rapp's off-Broadway study in Melancholic Triangulation and Obsession, Dashed, directed by Kelly Ruth Mercier. That is till March 15th at the Havana, and they have a little warning here that it's only available for those who are over 18 due to some explicit content. Queerly Canadian Theatre Series. Repertory performances of Brad Fraser's Poor Superman, directed by David C. Jones, and Michael Tremblay's Hosanna, directed by Jack Patterson. That also has a warning for over 18 people to come check it out. That's at the Waterfront Theatre on Granville Island till March 16th. Once again, it's the Queerly Canadian Theatre Series. Now, there's also a couple of festivals going on in Vancouver right now that we should be excited about. One of them is the Vancouver International Dance Festival. That's featuring more than 20 local, national, and international dance companies in main stage, cabaret, and late night performances. You can find all kinds of information about this at www.vidf.ca. And the Georgia Strait actually published a schedule of the Vancouver International Dance Festival in their paper as well, if you want to go pick one of those up. Another festival that's on right now, but not lasting nearly as long, only till March 2nd, is the 8th Annual Chutzpah Festival. The Lisa Nemitz International Showcase of Jewish Performing Arts features more than 25 performances and workshops with over 100 international, Canadian, and local artists, creating a multicultural celebration of music, theater, dance, and comedy. Some events for that take place at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts, some at the Jewish Community Center and the Norman Rothstein Theater on West 41st. And finally, something that you may have been hearing about on TV, because the government's plugging it a lot, is the Cultural Olympiad 2008. In conjunction with 60 cultural organizations, Vancouver 2010 Cultural Olympiad presents more than 300 performances and 10 exhibitions spanning music, dance, visual arts, theater, literary arts, and film. You can find more information at vancouver2010.com. It's till March 21st, and basically what it is they're putting on a cultural festival this year and next year leading up to the Olympics at the time when the Olympics would be. So kind of an interesting idea whether you're an Olympics supporter or not. Now, as I promised you earlier, we're going to be doing a review of Bombay Black, which I had a chance to check out last Thursday. I ventured down to Granville Island to check out this newest production from the Arts Club, Bombay Black, by playwright Anoush Irani. The stylish, macabre advertising, which focused on the quote, "Everyone is a killer, all you need is incentive," had drawn me in, and I expected a dark and lovely journey. I was, however, disappointed from the first 10 minutes in. The script was intriguing, following a young dancer in Bombay as she struggles to understand the advances of a blind man who claims to have known her since she was 5 years old, as well as the disturbing hatred her mother has for the girl's father. Anoush Irani describes his fascinating writing process, saying that he saw a girl dancing near the ocean in a dream. A blind man was sitting there, as if watching her. Irani wondered why he was there, and the script came from this. The way he makes sense of that one dreamy moment is impressive, and the script is thick with murder, betrayal, and lust. Unfortunately, the stage was not. The acting by all three actors fell flat, and the whole thing seemed a little uninteresting, especially in the first act. Considering the drama that the plot puts forward, this is almost a feat. On the whole, I would say I was more impressed with the advertising for this production than I was with the production itself. A good thing for some marketer somewhere, but a bad thing for these actors, and for the Arts Club, whose productions are usually of much higher caliber. Bombay Black is showing till March 15th at the Granville Island stage on Johnson on Granville Island. Once again, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick for your 5-Minute Arts Beat here on News 101.
Thanks, Katie. And before we go tonight, we're going to check in with our meteorologist, Selena Ferris, for a look at your weekend weather. Selena?
With a low-pressure system off the coast, it looks to be a wet weekend. Saturday will be cloudy with sunny periods and rain on and off, a high of 10 degrees and an overnight low of 3. Sunday will be cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and a high of 9. To start off next week, Monday we'll see some light rain followed by sunny skies into the week. That's your weekend weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
And thank you, Selena. That's our program for February 29th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca.
Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, I'm Katie Comley.
And I'm Rita Farkas. Thanks for listening. Coming up next, UBC Sports Friday with Tyler Noble. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
CITR.
CITR 101.9 FM presents...